we welcome you to this edition of Tuesday People, the podcast inspired by the book Tuesdays with Maury. I'm the author of that book, Mitch Albom, and I'm the host of this podcast. Along with me is Lisa Goetz, my friend and producer of this podcast. Always good to see you, Lisa.
Greetings, Mitch. I always love when you call me your friend. That always makes me happy.
You can put that on your business card. Mitch's friend.
Friend of Mitch Albom.
I remember a football coach who retired football coach, and he had been in the NFL and every, you know, quite a career. But when he retired, he made up business cards, and he just gave a business card and it said his name, and underneath it just said U.S. citizen. That was it. Like he didn't want any more associations with anything.
Else.
That was it. So friend,
nothing
you can
do.
Just put that on your on the on your business card. Just
friend.
Lisa Goetz,
I like
friend.
That.
Friend. Yeah.
I like it.
Professional friend.
Professional friend.
Yeah. So I want to share with you this week both some experiences and some lessons that I have learned not only from Maury, but since Maury passed away. Now, normally on the program, we take things that Maury said to me during the time that we were putting together or having our final class together, which ultimately became the book Tuesdays with Maury, and many of those lessons still ring true today. And we talk about how 25 years later, they still resonate. But this particular lesson, I just had another education in this past weekend. I went to go visit Maury's wife.
Oh.
Now, Maury passed away in 1997. So that is 24 years ago. I'm sorry, Maury passed away in 1995, 26 years ago. The book was 1997.
Yeah.
So 26 years ago. His wife, Charlotte, was always very independent, intelligent, accomplished. She was a professional therapist, counselor to many people. She had many patients. And now, God bless her, she's in her late 90s and is still with us. And I went to go visit her. And in the time that we visited together, I realized that, you know, we talked some about Maury and some about the book Tuesdays with Maury, obviously. And I realized that Charlotte was an exception to many rules of long-term spouses and long-term relationships. They had been married, gosh, I would want to say if Maury was 78, certainly close to 50 plus years.
Yeah. Right.
And in many cases, when people are married that long and one of the partners dies, the other often withers and in many cases dies shortly within the time frame of the first one dying. I have at the same time, and this is kind of why this topic is on my mind, I have good friends who just lost their father very unexpectedly. And it was actually their mother's health who they were worried about. They were both in their late 80s. And the father was, relatively speaking, you know, a little healthier, but sadly, he passed away. And immediately, there was concern for the mother who had a health incident within a week's time because of that very fact that they know that they were so closely connected. This was one of those marriages, you know, they were so tightly connected that the fear is, how do we keep the remaining spouse alive? How do we make sure that this bolt of grief that hits you like a log in the head doesn't knock over the other partner? Because we've seen relatively healthy people diminish in an extraordinarily quick amount of time and be gone after their husband or their wife dies.
Yeah.
Then here's the opposite case with Charlotte. Charlotte managed to, despite her intense love of Maury, managed to live yet another 26 years, is still alive. And for much of that time, the earlier years of it, the first couple of decades anyhow, she was working. She was dealing with her clients and her patients on a regular basis, even though she had this empty space in her life because Maury wasn't there anymore. So I want to talk a little bit about what happens when you lose a long-time partner, a long-time spouse, you know, someone who has been in your life. I mean, we could easily talk, you could always talk about, losing people, but this is a little bit different. This is when you lose somebody who has been part of your life for so long that it's almost impossible to imagine. And how do you individually deal with that? But also, how do family members and people around deal with that? So I want to offer up a few things that I have observed over time. First of all, there's no right way to feel after a long-term spouse dies. There's no like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm supposed to feel this, and if I'm not feeling this, I'm doing something wrong. It's different for everybody. And so you might feel numb. You might feel anxious. You might feel despairing or sad beyond belief. But whatever it is, there is no right thing. So first and foremost, you can't measure grief on a scale. It's not like buying deli meat. You know, I'll take 3/4 of a pound of turkey breast and you put it on it. And then yeah. they try to just put it on the scale and it has a little readout and whatever. Well, yeah. grief doesn't work like that. You can't say, well, we were married mm-hmm. for 56 years. So therefore, the appropriate reaction is, you know, 56 years worth of grief. Put it on the deli scale and we'll measure yeah. it out. There's no such thing. Sometimes people are so entwined with one another that when the spouse departs, it's almost as if it doesn't hit them. It's mm-hmm. almost as if they don't really accept it. And in many cases, in their mind, they may not even really accept it. I am always reminded of when my grandfather passed away on my father's side before my grandmother did. And we were sent, each of the grandchildren, they were living in Florida, and each of the grandchildren were sent down to stay with our grandmother one at a time for a week or two to keep her company. So I went, and my sister went, I think my brother went. So I went, and I was surprised to see that my grandmother was not crying. Mm-hmm. She wasn't morose. She didn't just sit in a chair and weep. She cooked. She made up the house. She did all the things. She was a pretty simple woman, you know, an immigrant. And, you know, she kind of did what she normally did. Except I noticed that when it was time for dinner, she would start calling for my grandfather.
Oh.
And she would say, Frank, his name was Frank. Frank, Frank, come on. We have to eat. And I would be in the kitchen with her, looking at
for
her.
A kid,
and of course,
that must be
I was only like 16 or 17, and you know, it was kind of freaky. Yeah. And she would say, and I didn't know what to say, so she would wait and she'd yell again, and then she'd say, "Oh, he has the television on; he can't hear."
Oh.
And but she wouldn't go in the room. She would just keep yelling, "Frank, come on, Frank! Oh, he has the TV on." He said, "Let's eat without him. You know, he'll come in." And this went on the entire week we were there. And I didn't have the heart to just tell her he's gone. I think this was how she coped with it. She just didn't really accept that she was gone. He was being Frank, and he wasn't answering. And you know, the TV was on too loud, and all the other little assorted things. They had been together for so long. I just don't think in her case she could imagine how to act in a world without him. So she chose not. She chose not to. She just chose to be in the world with him without him physically there. And that should not surprise anybody. Now, is that more right or more loving or more honorable than someone who breaks down and weeps and says, "I can't believe he's gone"? No. It's one way of dealing with it. Another way of dealing with it is to do, I think, what Charlotte ended up doing, was to just be very pragmatic about it, but also go back to work, get back into her mm-hmm. routine in that case, you know, but go back to the things that she did regularly. Maybe do them even more so. Bury yourself in your work. That can be a perfectly normal response. And I would think that people who do that, they probably live longer without their partner. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not scientific, mm-hmm. so please don't take it. Yeah, I don't have data to back this up. I said, I imagine. because they are basically saying, I am going to accept a world where my spouse is not in it. And I'm going to find ways to thrive in that world, maybe not romantically, maybe not in a marriage form, but I'm going to work or I'm going to whatever, and I'm going to use the time that I suddenly have and put it into that. And yeah, those people, I think, kind of take the deviation opposite of my grandmother. They say, I'm going to create a new world that doesn't have my partner in it. Mm-hmm. And again, is that cold? Is that not as loving as someone who talks to someone who isn't there? No. It's mm-hmm. another way of dealing with the grief. And you should be kind to yourself if you find yourself oriented that way and say, life is, it's as if we're given multiple lives or multiple planets to live on, if it's easier to think of it that way. We have the planet that we live on when our spouse is alive,
yeah,
and we are a married couple. And then we have the planet to live on when our spouse is no longer here and we are single. We are alone. We are widows or widowers. Different mm-hmm. planet. And it feels like a different planet. The things that you do are different. The people you associate with are different. The opportunities you have are different. The conversations are different. The bed is different. The pillow is different. The bathroom is different. All of that. I remember doing a piece for Parade Magazine many years ago about older people who lost their partners and the different things that they would do to remember them. And one woman would spray her husband's cologne, just a mm-hmm. dab of it on the pillow next mm-hmm. to her. Because for all those years, you know, even guys who they take a shower, whatever, they still have a little bit of, you can still smell it, you know.
Yeah.
And that enabled her to sleep better. You know, she knew she was doing it. She wasn't kidding herself like he was still there. She just liked the smell of it. Another one I remember yeah. left her husband's clothes in the closet and just
that's
didn't.
That's a hard one, yeah.
Yeah, but didn't get rid of them because she just, it gave her comfort to see his clothes there.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't freak her out. And so she kept them. There are many things, you know, little acts like that people do because it is a different planet. You know, it's just a different planet that you're on. But that planet can yeah. also be the planet where you choose to develop a different life, a life of contribution and value.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You're not insulting yeah. your partner, you know, by doing that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Now, I know, Lisa, you yeah. went through this with your dad and mom. Your mom mm-hmm. Passed away. Your dad's still with us. What was that like in your case?
Well, I'm going to do my dad in 1 second because I want to go back to the last thing you just said about people who are able to move on. My aunt, after my uncle died, they had a place in, they live in Michigan. but they had a place in Arizona as well. She continued to go to Arizona and, you know, for the winters, and has a very active life there. She has friends, she golfs, she's in her 90s now too. Mm-hmm. And she goes to dinner parties and card parties and all this stuff. She remained extremely active. And I swear, if you saw her, you'd think she was 70, not 90. She's, you know, very, you know, youthful, I would say. And, you know, obviously not that she didn't care about my uncle or that it didn't hurt her.
Right.
But she was able to just sort of pick up and go. My dad, on the other hand, definitely struggled. And you could see it in his health and everything. I mean, granted, my dad just turned 99 last week, but so he's no youngster.
God bless him. Yeah.
So I know. So I guess his health is going to be deteriorating anyway. But, you know, I think he was so dependent on my mom, where my aunt was probably not as dependent on my uncle. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, my mom was the one who kept everything together. You know, she gave my dad his medicines. She cooked for him. She knew where his shoes were. She took his clothes out for Sundays, for church, all of that. So when she left, he was left like, huh? You know, he didn't know quite what to do. And I think he was very lost. So I think there's an element maybe of how independent you were from one another in your life. Right. And I think that that sort of has something to do with it. However, I have a friend of ours who lost a husband a few years ago. And, you know, my age has never been the same since. And it was a very independent woman. And so I guess you don't know how it's going to hit people. I you know, but I think there's some sort of sense of who's the first one to go, who's going to get, because I think it could flip. If the husband goes first, in some cases, the wife is crushed. But if the wife were to have gone first, the husband may be able to continue. You know, many times men find new wives, I think, quicker than women find new husbands. I think, you know, I've seen more of my parents' friends who get remarried after death.
The men.
It's the men who get remarried, but the women don't. So
well,
that's so complicated.
Unfair thing in this society, you know, the older men with younger women, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, older women with younger men, that's like, you know, there's somehow.
I know. It's funny because my dad had this lady friend at the place where he lives, and they did everything together. Like they ate together, they had fun together, they whatever. I said, why don't you guys start, you know, maybe she could be your new, you know, lady friend, you know? And he said, she's too old for me. And I'm like, well, how old is she? And he said, she's 97. At the time, my dad was 96. I'm like, she's a year older than you. She's 97 years old.
Yeah.
My dad thought that was too old for
him. Phenomenal that people 96 to 97 are having these discussions, period. But the point is that there isn't a right or wrong way. They're all right. They're all, and that's the whole thing. You've got to, number one, go easy on yourself. Don't torture yourself over the methodology, which is hitting you as the right way to grieve, because there isn't one right way to grieve. And you may find that, especially in a long-term relationship, it may not hit you for a year. It may not really hit you that you're really alone. You know, you could be like my grandmother, walking around the house and talking to somebody who isn't there until finally something happens that hits it home for you that you're alone. May take time. Mm-hmm. Number two, you've got to take care of yourself physically. Because one of the things, and you mentioned husbands who are dependent on their wives for pills, for food, for schedules and organizing. Sometimes when those wives pass away after a long period of time, the guys stop eating, or they eat badly, or they just eat junk. They forget to take their medicine. So your physical health starts deteriorating along with your mental health, and that's no good at all. You really need to make sure, and you know, as someone who has grieved both parents and children, sadly, in his life, I know exactly that whole thing about I just don't want to eat, I don't want to drink, I don't want anything. You got to eat something. I don't want anything. You know, I know you don't want. You got to eat it anyhow. No, I don't feel it. I don't really know where that comes from. I just think it's a very human thing. Like, you just lose the appetite or whatever. It's almost as if you're torturing yourself. You're like punishing yourself that you don't deserve to be fed. You know, you don't deserve to be taken care of if your loved one isn't there to share it with you. But you have to. You have got to take care of your physical health. So that's number two. Number three is as you pointed out, Lisa, adjust your social life. A lot of times, I think when people lose longtime spouses, husbands or wives, they look at it as like, well, if I'm going to, you know, have a social life, I mean, I'm not interested in finding anybody else. I don't want to replace my husband or my wife. It'll never do. You shouldn't look at it like that. You should look at it, again, we're on another planet now. Mm-hmm. You're not looking to, how will I ever find somebody who is as good as my husband was or as good as my wife was, who's going to know me that well? You're not going to find that, especially if you're in your 60s or 70s or 80s and you've been together with somebody since you were 20s. You can't meet somebody and start living again like you were 20 and grow together. You're going to meet somebody at this level where you are. And in many times, you don't need a romantic relationship, you know, per se. You don't need it to be physical per se. First and foremost, you just need companionship. People to talk to. People so that you are not buried alone. Some people just feel like, well, that's my only alternative is like to look for another wife. And I don't want to look for another wife or look for another husband, but I don't want to look for another. No, that's not your only alternative. There are small steps in between.
Well, and for a lot of people, I think it's very difficult for them to try to operate as a single person and not part of a couple. And when they go back out to socialize with their normal friends that they've been socializing with for 40 years, it's a very different dynamic because that other person is not there, especially if all the other couples are still intact.
Right.
So I think that's a very challenging thing for some people to do. But you have to realize that they like you for you, so you can, you know, you're still welcome and you're still going to be the same part of those conversations and everything that you had prior.
Right. Yeah, but it may also be that for a while you should avoid those, you know, in the immediate thing, because if they're just going to be crushing things, they're going to make you uncomfortable, they're going to make everybody else uncomfortable. Oh, you know, I wish that Manny was here. Oh, I wish that Sam was here. Oh, I wish Gloria was here. She can't. You can only do that so much, then it becomes torturous. Sometimes you need to take a break from those couple friends and just, you know, maybe spend a little bit more time with people who are in similar situations to you or who are single or have lost somebody already, and then say, eventually I'll get back to that. But going, you're right, Lisa, that's a very important point, to go and try to expect that everything is going to be normal if you just go back out with your friends. You're just going to have an empty chair there.
Yeah.
That's not normal. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So you have to watch out for that. Another thing to be careful about is, and not be too hard on yourself, is finances. You know, this is a practical part of things, but many couples, as you pointed out before when you were talking about your mom and your dad, they kind of divide the labor, divide the responsibility, and somebody becomes the financial person. And if that's the person who dies, you know, you've got to be very careful that you don't just let everything go and, oh, well, that was my husband's role and I can't do that. Well, then you got to find somebody who can, because you're...
Yeah, that was my mom.
Life on the new planet still demands that you pay your taxes and still demands that you, you know, pay your rent and all the rest of it. So again, this is something that people go through all the time about, you know, oh, I can't deal with it, or he always took care of it. I don't want to deal with it now. But then find somebody who will, because it can become a real burden, and a lot of people get in trouble and they don't file the right paperwork, and if there's estate planning things that have to be done and all the rest of it, and they don't do it, they really can end up paying a big price, you know? So you've got to make sure that you take care of that. Yeah. So we've got the
financial. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did your dad do when she was gone?
The one thing that was weird is after my mom died, we didn't get birthday cards with a $25 check in them anymore. That was the one thing. I don't think my dad, we got birthday cards, but I'm like, where's that money?
He forgot the check. Maybe she never told him she was including a check.
That, I don't think he ever knew.
It's coming
that
out of his account that he didn't know. Along those lines, the home also is very important. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times people live in a house together and then they feel that, oh, my spouse is gone. I don't want to be here. You know, or how am I going to manage the house without them? And sometimes people jump out and try to make a really fast, you know, I'm selling the house, I'm moving out. That's generally not a good idea. You should stay where you are for a while, maybe, you know, maybe up to a year or so, and just sort of absorb what's going on. Because it's a big thing to move, and it's a big thing to move into a new mm-hmm. house or a new living situation. And I know that people say, well, it's haunted, I'm too lonely, wherever. But you know, it's a little bit like running back into the game after you get a bandage on top of a big wound. You know, just because you put a Band-Aid over it doesn't mean that it's healed. It takes time under that Band-Aid to heal. And we take time to grieve and to heal and to suddenly race out into a new home life or a new town or a new thing. That I think, would throw you off far more than you would know. And that's something to watch out for as well.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Finally, and I'll play you this little cut that Maury said when I talked to him about, you know, his mother died very young, and his father had to get by without her until he remarried. And he really kind of turned inward and didn't really know what to do. And that was just sort of his way of dealing with things. But I asked Maury about what sort of the takeaway was as a child from seeing his mother die and realizing that that relationship didn't go on forever. And I think it was pertinent to what we're talking about here. Here's what he said.
The big internalization was a fact that the world is a dangerous place. If you make attachments to things or people, they'll be snatched away. So you better be careful. Don't put too much investment into things or people, because you're apt to lose them. That's what I internalized.
So that internalization, even for a young boy, as Maury was when his mother died, that doesn't go away, and that repeats itself. And that's something you have to watch out for as well with the loss of a spouse, is that you don't mm-hmm. say, oh, I get this. The world is a dangerous place. I can't make attachments like I did with my husband or with my wife, because they'll be taken away and I don't want to hurt mm-hmm. like this again. So then what happens is you just don't get close to anybody, and that's not good. You know, if you're healthy enough and you're going to be here for a while, you need to be human and you need to interact in human fashion. And you can't just say, well, I'm in mourning and I don't want to feel anything anymore. That's mm-hmm. not living fully human. Now, I know in some cultures, you know, when a husband dies, the woman is a widow forever, even if the husband dies very young. And to put on black headdresses and black dresses and cover your face and just live like that from your 20s until your 80s. I mean, again, it's not for me to evaluate cultures, but that just seems a harsh way to punish someone for something that they didn't have anything to do with.
Yeah.
You know, if the husband dies young or the husband dies in war or in battle or whatever, you're relegated to 60 some odd years of just living in a, you know, as a widow and a marked widow and with that just seems a little too much.
That happened a lot in my culture, like in the Serbian culture. The mm-hmm. ladies would always sit in church, and you always knew who those ladies were, all dressed in their black. And they looked, now when I think about it, they were probably only like 50 at the time, right. But they looked like they were 90. You know, everybody looked old and sad, and it's a whole different way, you know. Again, not bad. I mean, you can't fault anybody, but no. I like to think we all live and we all die. And I think we've learned that on the show now that we're on our 79th episode. Mm. The one continuing thread that goes through this is that we live and we all die. So if we keep that in mind, you have to live while you're here. And I know that's hard sometimes, but that really is important.
Yep. And it's perfectly fine to do that. It's okay to be redefined. You know, we don't all live with one definition in life. We don't. We think of the simple things. You work at one place, then you take a new job and you work someplace else. I used to be an IBM employee, now I'm an Apple employee. Okay? That's classification. You have a house, then you sell it, you move into a condo. I used to be a homeowner, now I'm a condo owner. You know, you move from the condo to an apartment. I used to own a condo, now I'm a renter. We reclassify ourselves all the time. I never used to play golf, now I'm a golfer. You know, nobody seems to mind that. But when the definition has to come that, well, I was married and now I'm a widow, or now I'm a widower, we rail against that. We fight that. We don't want that classification. It's all right to come up with a new definition, to redefine who you are relative to the world and all the rest of it. It's all right. It's part of the circle of life. You just go through different stages. So don't feel like you can't define yourself differently. And don't feel, as Maury expressed there, that, oh, I don't want to ever show affection to anybody again, because affection comes with a price. The price is it can be taken away. And then you end up feeling like I feel now, and I don't ever want to feel this way again. So I'm just not going to care about anybody. And normally, you know, if you have a good marriage and, you know, your wife or husband, they don't want you to become an unfeeling, uncaring person on their behalf. Mm. They want you to use the love that you are not using for them someplace else. You know, it doesn't always have to be somebody else. It could be with family members or kids or whatever. But you have to be willing to sort of say, okay, I'm going to be defined more this way now, and be okay with it. Life redefines you all the time. And most of the time we sort of accept it, but then sometimes we don't want to. So these are all things to kind of watch out for when you should find yourself after a long-term relationship suddenly on your own. And as I say, I think about Charlotte, who's done an amazing job, and 26 years, you know, most of which were totally independent and working and maintaining. And, you know, people at work would say to her, oh, I read the book about your husband, Tuesdays with Maury. And, you know, I always would say, boy, that's a lot different than when people say that to me. Like, I read the book about your old professor. Well, okay, he's the old professor. He was 40 years older than me. Of course, he's going to pass away. I'm still going to be here. But when people say, oh, I read the book about your husband, to the wife, it hits them differently, you know,
that's
because
deep.
It's yet another reminder that her husband is gone and is influencing people. And in fact, they're having more of a relationship with him than she is. You know, we're studying him in school. We're studying the book. We're writing papers. I always worried that that would make her feel like, well, you guys are closer to my husband than I am right now. But that's not the way to look at it either. I mean, you have a right to have in your life whatever and whoever you want, and whatever part of the person who's gone is right for you as well. You have the right to experience your own grief, however uniquely you do that. You have a right to feel a bunch of different emotions, however you want to do that. You have a right to have these moments where you just kind of, you know, and then come back from it. These are all normal. And you have a right to hang on to your memories. And, you know, don't let anybody ever say to you, well, it's time to move on, time to move on. I hate that phrase, time to move on. This is not, we're not like in the Stagecoach days where everybody gets into their Stagecoach, time to move on, get along, little doggies. Come on, here we go. You know, we're all going out. Our Stagecoaches are going out. Some people get on with it a lot slower then other people get on with it. And you have every right to do it at your own pace. But the overall philosophy, you know, life is for the living, I think makes sense. In Maury's religion, in the Jewish religion, there's a very limited time of mourning, a very specific time of mourning. And after that time is up, you're supposed to get on with your life. Because the philosophy of Judaism is, it's a religion for the living and for life here. God will take care of heaven and where we're going and all the rest of it. But for here, and so the Shiva period is limited, you know, Shiva being, you know, when you sort of sit in grief. And you are told not to mourn beyond a certain time and then get on with life. And, you know, I think that's easier for some than others, especially if we're losing somebody who's so close to us for so many years. So hopefully these tips have helped you a little bit. And if you should find yourself in that situation or find somebody else who's in that situation, or if your parents are going through it, then by all means, try to keep some of these things in mind. And remember that everybody goes through this, but everybody goes through it individually. And so it's not one size fits all just because so many people go through it. Be easy on yourself. Take care of your physical health, your mental health. Adjust your social life, adjust your financial life, adjust your housing life if need be. But don't feel bad about things. It's something, sadly, that we all go through eventually if we're lucky enough to live a long time. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. We will see you next week for another edition of Tuesday People. If you like what you heard, you can go to WeTuesdayPeople.com on the web. That's our website, WeTuesdayPeople.com. And find out more about our show and previous episodes and things like that. Until we see you next time, on behalf of Lisa Goich, Lisa, nice to talk with you as always. I am Mitch Albom saying, see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Tuesday People. To be part of our conversation, join the Tuesday People community at WeTuesdayPeople.com. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode and share it with your friends. We look forward to having you with us every Tuesday because, after all, we're Tuesday people.